Welcome back to Raider Nation Radio. It's the morning tailgate here in the third hour here on R&R 920. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor here in our Las Vegas studios. Thank you so much for being with us. Make sure you text the word tickets to 702-365-9200 so you can qualify for the six-day, five-night trip extravaganza to Nashville, Tennessee. Oh, man, you got the Jack Daniel's Distillery Tour and $750 cash money to spend. Text tickets to 702-365-9200 and you qualify for that amazing trip. Or you just take the $3,000 payout. It's up to you. That's why it's the summer of fun, brought to you by Planet Nissan. Here we are, Raider Nation Radio in hour three, and Ryan Wallace joins us now, the OG, a man who I respect and admire to the highest extent from the very beginning with the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas. He's also your host from the pre to post on all Vegas Golden Knights games, and he joins us now here on Raider Nation Radio as we talk about the Stanley Cup. I can't believe we're here, Ryan, for a Game 7, and that will be heard today on Raider Nation Radio 920. Pre-game begins at 4:30. What was your gut reaction when the Florida Panthers took that 3-0 series lead in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah, I mean, when Florida took a 3-0 lead in the Stanley Cup Final, I thought that we were looking at a 5-game series at most, right? Okay. I think a lot of people expected that, you know, the Oilers would show up in Game 4, which they did, that they'd win that game, which they did, and then Florida, with an opportunity to close out on home ice, would take care of business, and it just didn't happen. The Edmonton Oilers have scratched and clawed their way back into this series, and if you believe in momentum, they've got it all right now going into Game 7.
I mean, what's more important to you, though, or at least surprising, that the Panthers couldn't close it out, or the Oilers actually found a way to scrap back and rally?
So I probably am more surprised at the fact that the Florida Panthers have not been able to close it out, because one of the hallmarks of this team since losing last year to the Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Final is that all throughout this season, they have dealt with adversity really well. They have come up with big games and key moments when they've needed to, and they've done a great job at just kind of ending series when it was their time to end them throughout their playoff run. Mm-hmm. They were able to eliminate Tampa Bay relatively quickly. They were able to take care of Boston handily. They were able to really overtake the series against the New York Rangers. But in this scenario, when you have every opportunity to end it, I'm more surprised at the fact that the Florida Panthers looked rattled and shaken in this spot, given how good they were early on in the playoffs and throughout the entire season dealing with moments just like this.
Can I make an argument that one thing that they didn't have to deal with in those previous series was the best player on the ice being on the other team, Connor McDavid, who has just risen to the occasion and has been not just good but spectacular, especially in the bigger moments of this series. 4 points apiece in Games 4 and Game 5 to keep the Edmonton Oilers from getting swept and then to push it into a Game 7. Can I make an argument that that's something that Florida has not had to deal with up until now?
Yeah, I mean, you can make the argument, but They still went toe-to-toe with Nikita Kucherov, who was right there in the mix this year as one of the best players, if not the best player in the world, just in terms of point production, all that in the regular season. And they did a great job on him. You had Artemi Panarin and Chris Kreider and Mika Zibanejad on the Rangers. You had David Pastrnak, to a degree, on the Boston Bruins. Mm-hmm. It's not like the Florida Panthers haven't had to deal with really good elite offensive skill. It's just that Connor McDavid's on a different planet. So yes, you can make that argument, but at the same time, I feel like when you look at the Panthers and their path through the playoffs, they have gone up against some really good quality elite talent, and they've done a great job up until this final series. So it's a calling card for McDavid, and it's uncharacteristic to a degree of the Florida Panthers.
It's Ryan Wallace here on Raider Nation Radio. You can follow him at Ryan Hockey Guy on X. Then what has the Oilers been doing differently in order to get McDavid the puck more often, or at least provide better scoring chances in their zone?
Well, it's not necessarily a thing that the Oilers have done outside of just McDavid doing whatever he wants to do. I mean, you look at the game-winning goal in Game 5, to Corey Perry, that's just Connor McDavid going through five guys and making a great play and passing the puck to Corey Perry, and all he's got to do is bank it in, chip shot. I think when you look at this series and you look at the final, the last three games where the Oilers have turned things around, there's a couple of things that stand out to me. Number one, the Oilers aren't shooting themselves in the foot anymore. Mm. They're not giving up a bunch of breakaways. They are instead really honing in on the puck, making sure that life is difficult on the Panthers. You look at Game 3, it was a six-minute stretch where the Panthers had about three breakaways, and each one ended up in the back of the net, and that's why the Panthers were able to take a 3-0 series lead. I think the Oilers made a concerted effort to just not give away freebies to Florida, and it's been harder and harder for Florida to find that offensive touch. They haven't been able to break out and rebound or have breakaways, and it's just been a tougher go for the Panthers in and around the net for the Oilers. And that, in turn, has allowed Edmonton to kind of jump on those mistakes and the forcing of the play from Florida, and it's allowed Edmonton more breakaway opportunities, and they've been able to convert on those.
Ryan, not every seven-game series is alike. You know, sometimes you have the teams just hold on to their home court advantage and it naturally gets to a game seven. Sometimes you have, you know, they're trading back and forth. But in this case, this is why I'm really afraid for Florida, although it could all change on a dime. We've seen that in sports plenty of times. But this is one team just completely wresting control of the series from another. One team feels like they've fallen and can't get up. The other feels like they're surging and all the momentum is on their side. They've literally ripped that control from the Florida Panthers. And I don't know that, you know, who has the edge here. Is it the team that's surging right now? Or is it, could we see a situation where Florida just wakes up from, you know, the brink of the dead and reclaims control of the series in time to win this series?
Yeah, I don't know. If I was looking at this from, you know, from a betting perspective, I don't know how you don't throw all your money at the Edmonton Oilers.
Right.
Right? Like, they've got all the momentum. And again, if you believe momentum carries over, and it's right. hard to argue against that in this series, when you look at what the last three games have been for Edmonton, I think that that's the right play. Now, at the same time, the Edmonton Oilers weren't playing for anything other than the next game. And now tonight, for the first time ever, they're not just playing for the next game, they are playing for the Stanley Cup. And what we've seen out of Florida is a tightness that really did set in for them in Game 4. And the weight of playing for the trophy you dream of, I think, is a variable here that, you know, maybe we're not giving enough credit to. It's the first time the Oilers are going to feel that, and it's not about nothing to lose at this point. They have everything to lose all of a sudden in this game. How does that impact Edmonton? That's going to be a big question for me.
Well, I've often wondered, like, what would happen if Paul Maurice did not win a cup this year, and what would happen with the Florida Panthers, because they've been on such a great run since 2021, you know, first place finish, fourth place finish with a Stanley Cup final appearance. And now this, like, if they don't win it now, then could you see like a real, you know, changing of the guard in Florida where they no longer have a belief in what Maurice is able to do? But at the same time, could this be one of those spots where it's like, you'll never get this close again, Florida, if you don't do it tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it feels that way. I don't know how you rebound, honestly. Like, I don't know how you rebound if you blow this game. I don't know how you rebound if you're the Florida Panthers and you have a 3-0 series lead a year after losing in the Stanley Cup final, saying all the right things about how this is going to be different, how this is your mission, and then you blow a 3-0 series lead only to lose in Game 7. As an organization, like, I don't know how you have belief as a fan base. I don't know how you have belief that anything's ever going to be different. And that's really what's at stake here for not just the Florida Panthers, but you mentioned Paul Maurice. He's never won a Stanley Cup. He's got 1,800 games in the National Hockey League. He's one of the most winning coaches in terms of playoff performance, but he doesn't have his name on the thing. So this would be one of the biggest collapses in sports history if the Florida Panthers do not win this game, and I don't know how you rebound from that.
I want to go back to what you were talking about, the question prior, in terms of the mindset. One thing that the Florida Panthers also weren't doing during the last three games was playing with a sense of desperation in terms of the season ends today if we lose. They haven't had to deal with that the last three games, whereas the Edmonton Oilers did have desperation on their side, because if they had lost any of these three previous games, their season would have been over. The Florida Panthers would have won the Stanley Cup. Now both teams have that sense of desperation. If you lose, you're done tonight. who has the edge in this in a battle of desperation of we got to just answer tonight or else our season is over? Who do you feel has the edge, just talent for talent, skill for skill, all of those things being equal? Who has the edge in terms of that?
Yeah, I think it's the Edmonton Oilers because they've had to deal with elimination quite a bit in these playoffs. This will be their sixth elimination game that they have played in where if they lose, they are done. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's hard not to side with the Edmonton Oilers. This will be the Florida Panthers' first elimination game this playoffs. And there's experience you gain. Obviously, they didn't handle it well in Game 5 last year against Vegas. So, you know, you look at this, you look at it from this angle, like the Edmonton Oilers have won a game where they were facing elimination in the Stanley Cup final, and they've done it three times over. The Florida Panthers never have. They have no experience with it. So if you're leaning on that, it's the Edmonton Oilers in this spot.
Oilers-Panthers pregame begins 4:30 here on Raider Nation Radio. How do you expect the first period to play out, especially the first 10 minutes?
I expect there to be a lot of nerves. I mean, it's hard, right? Because the Panthers have looked shell-shocked at times, and they really have not started particularly well. So I don't know outside of, you know, if the Oilers let the idea of winning the Stanley Cup creep into their heads, I think it might be really sloppy over the first 10 minutes. But if, you know, the Panthers are playing a little bit more free, understanding that it's just one game, maybe they can finally establish a forecheck early on and really feed off of the fans. I would expect a lot of nervous energy in the building. I think a lot of Florida fans have resigned themselves to the fact that this is happening and their team is going to lose. And I wonder what that crowd energy is going to be like and how it kind of feeds in. But my expectation is first 10 minutes or so, it's going to be pretty sloppy. I think the nerves are going to be there for both sides, and it's just going to be a while before both teams are able to settle into this game.
I was just going to ask you about the atmosphere because I've been in tons of Game 7 situations in buildings, and the home building was either ready to celebrate and feeling like it was a coronation, and other buildings were just this sense of despair of, is this really happening to us right now? And I feel like that's going to be the case in Florida. However, how big would just getting off to a lead, scoring the first goal, maybe early on in this game, to just turn that crowd into bedlam rather than despair?
You got to give them something to believe in, right?
Yeah.
And I think right now the fans in Florida don't have anything to believe in. You haven't had anything that's really been that inspiring over the last three games. And so, yeah, I mean, an early goal for the Florida Panthers would go a long way, not just because you want to be inspired, but they've been one of the worst teams in terms of 5-on-5 goal differential in the first period. So if you can get out to a lead, if you can control the way the game is played, that would really feed into the hands of the Florida Panthers and how they want to play, but it would also give their fans some belief in a scenario where they don't really have any. It'd be huge if the Panthers could score first.
You know, yesterday, and we're speaking with Ryan Wallace at Ryan Hockey Guy up on X, Forbes came out with valuations of team revenues in the NHL based on last season's revenue marks. Here's just an overall. The Oilers are tied for the top with team revenues for $281 million. The Panthers are fifth from the bottom at $161 million. That's a major discrepancy between two teams. What is the business model in the NHL when you see these two matchups where you think the small market Edmonton Oilers are actually making $140 million more in revenue than the Florida Panthers in Miami?
Yeah, I mean, I think it kind of boils down to Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, right? Like,
yeah.
It boils down to generational-type talents, guys that not only transcend their team, but also transcend the game itself. And I think that, you know, you can certainly lean on that and look at that as one of the big discrepancies. Like, Matthew Tkachuk is a star, but he's not on the level of Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl.
Sure.
Sasha Barkov is an amazing hockey player. I believe top five, top 10 in the league right now, but he's not going to move the needle the way that a Connor McDavid or a Leon Draisaitl will, just in terms of revenue that you're looking at in this situation. Plus, I mean, the simple fact is you're looking at a Canadian market versus
yes.
a U.S. market, and you get into a scenario where you've got two of the best players in the world on your team night in and night out. There's a lot of reason to go to the games and to watch the games and to consume everything and buy everything that you can when it comes to the Oilers right now.
Ryan, great stuff tonight. All right, well then, Edmonton, the 10th team to rally from down 3-0 to force a game 7. Do you have any prediction for tonight's game?
Yeah, I mean, going into the series, I picked the Oilers in 7. Stuart Skinner is undefeated in games 4 through 7 in any series so far this year.
Wow.
Like, he's been unreal. But at the same time, Paul Maurice is 4-0 in game 7. So there's kind of that carrot dangling out here.
Something's got to give.
I'm gonna stick with the Oilers. Like, I just think right now, the Florida Panthers are playing scared. They're playing not to make mistakes, and when you do that, you're going to make a lot of them. And I don't see how they come back in this spot. I just don't.
Great stuff, Ryan. Thank you so much for coming on today. We look forward to hearing your show, The Golden Knights Insiders, and we appreciate your time this morning.
All right, thanks so much, guys.
Thank you. At Ryan Hockey Guy, Ryan Wallace, the fantastic host with the Golden Knights Insiders, and the host from Pre to Post on all VGK games. And if you don't win this, Florida, no one will ever forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, this will be one that'll go down to the books where if Edmonton is the second team in NHL history to come back from down 3-0 to win a Stanley Cup, that's the storybook ending that everyone hopes for.
Will anyone outside of Florida really care?
And there's that.
No. I mean, the answer is no. Here's my thing, and I don't want this to come off as anti-American. I'm as proud of an American as anyone. But I kind of want to see a Canadian team win.
Sure.
It's been
31 years.
31 years. Mm-hmm. The last time was the Montreal Canadiens against the LA Kings and Wayne Gretzky and Marty McSorley and the curved, stick and all that kind of stuff. So I would like to see Canada, a team from Canada, finally, crack the code and win an NHL championship. I know this will be, demoralizing for that pocket of fans, the Florida Panther fans down there in South Florida. But I think they'll survive, and I think the United States will survive if this doesn't happen. Whereas I think this is such a big deal for Canada and such a big deal for Edmonton, and they do have generational talent and Connor McDavid and all that and everything else. So I'm rooting for the Edmonton Oilers tonight.
Yeah, I have a real soft spot. I want to see Canada get into that spot because it even comes to this point where even as the postseason started, I was like rooting for Toronto to make a move because it's been 57 years since they've won a cup. Those fans are bleeding. They're it's like the scene of Gettysburg over there. They've dealt with so much tragedy and they just never make it. It's been a long time. And Edmonton, I mean, in the 1980s, could you think of a more well-oiled machine in hockey than what the Islanders and the Edmonton Oilers were doing?
Yeah.
It was powerful with Gretzky and Mark Messier and Grant Fuhr. It was just awesome to behold. So maybe they can go and bottle this magic up one more time.
Yeah, we will see. I am sitting in for Q today, so the show will be slightly shorter by about a half an hour because we will go to the pregame show for game 7. By the way, getting ready to go on a trip to New York, got to buy a suit. I still have, there's so much that needs to be done. I'm going to a wedding, a beautiful rooftop wedding in New York City for my niece. So yeah, it is great, but it also means spending a lot of money, which I am glad to do. But maybe you're in a situation where you need $500 or $5,000 right now. And maybe, the credit cards are maxed out or the credit isn't where it needs to be and you're having a difficult time figuring out how you're going to come up with that money. And maybe you're losing some sleep over it. Don't, I'm telling you. Because for over 20 years, the experts at LendingStore.com have helped millions of people who needed cash quickly. And all credit types are welcome. Now cash is as close as your phone. And as soon as tomorrow, when you need cash, you need it now. So why wait? Look, just go over to LendingStore.com. Let them help you find a lender that can get you $500 to $5,000 cash tomorrow. Just go to LendingStore.com right now for all the details.
A real battle in Las Vegas.
And you have said you walked into the studio trolling me, a Raiders fan, and you said that it's quite a handsome backup quarterback. And to that I would say, all he needs is an opportunity.
That's
it's
right.
He's never thrown to Devontae Adams.
That's right. He's got the best job in the NFL because he can start games. Yeah. He can back up a quarterback. Mm-hmm. Makes a ton of money. Got a great personality. He's expressive.
That's Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter from this Sunday's SportsCenter, talking about the Raiders quarterback battles. We're back here on Raider Nation Radio. Thank you so much for being with us here on Raider Nation Radio 920. Clay Baker, Vinny Bonsignor. Catch our podcast up online at lvsportsnetwork.com after the show, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all platforms. From the text line 702-365-9200, from the 408, it says, from those comments, it makes me feel that Aiden O'Connell might have an in because of his relationship with Davante Adams. Here's another one from the 323 saying that work that they had last year between Davante and Aiden O'Connell, it looks like it's going to carry over and Davante trusts Aiden from those comments. 702-365-9200 would take your calls as well. I don't know if we can say the word trust, but I think familiarity would be good. At least Davante knows tendencies, and perhaps Aiden O'Connell, more importantly, understands where Davante needs to get the ball to be explosive.
Yeah, it wasn't great last year in that regard. It definitely needs to improve. There were too many throws or a handful that we can remember that really put him in some jeopardy. in some danger, and they got to stop that ASAP. You can't get your best player hurt by not delivering balls where they need to be. They played. They have a body of work. They have a little bit of a track record together. I know that Davante has a lot of goodwill and good feelings for Aiden O'Connell. And the key is, can Aiden O'Connell pick up where he left off last year in a new offense? And not just play to the level that he played at last year, but improve on that. Again, I go back to what we said earlier today. I think why the Raiders would prefer Aiden O'Connell to win this job is because they believe that there's still a remaining ceiling there that he can get to. Nobody knows what that ceiling is. I think he's got the intelligence. I think he's got the moxie. I think he's got the leadership skills. He's shown over the course of his career that he knows how to deal with adversity. He's a fighter. He's a battler. He's all of those things. But what it ultimately comes down to in the NFL is, what is your ceiling, and how does that apply to our program? And if he can reach a ceiling that makes him a suitable quarterback for a championship caliber team, then he'll solidify his spot moving forward. If that ceiling isn't possible for him, they will be on the lookout for another quarterback.
Yeah, it's plain and simple.
It's the way it's got to be.
Right. And they, like you said, like, even at times last year, it still didn't look like how you want it to look.
No, of course not.
It was still like, boy, there seems to be like a real gap of like, when does this learning curve turn into something that you can you rely on? But how long do you think it will take Aiden to actually go and maybe make an emergence? Or will this have to go into preseason as maybe those two start battling it out?
It's going to go into the regular season. I keep saying that.
Yeah.
There's no way to really know until the actual games start. And then whoever is designated the starting quarterback going into that first game, you can say all you want, that's our guy, that's our quarterback, this is the guy that we're riding with. But when the disparity between the gap between quarterback one and quarterback two is as negligible as it is right now, this isn't, we'll go back a few years ago, to Derek Carr and Nathan Peterman, there was a huge difference between those two quarterbacks.
Oh God, yes.
So of course, even if Derek Carr struggled a little bit or wasn't winning the way to the level that you want him to win at, John Gruden, would what are you going to do? Move to Nathan Peterman? That's a worse off, far worse option than Derek Carr. So there was ever any notion to switch quarterbacks, no matter how well or how badly Derek Carr.
Even with Mariota, there was never a question.
No, and Mariota that first year was hurt, so it was a moot point. It wasn't until his second year that he was healthy. But at that point, Derek Carr was the better option. Now you have a situation where it's almost a pick 'em. If you look at the statistics, they're kind of the same guy. They go about it a little bit differently. So, in terms of what they do and the numbers that they've produced, at least, the first nine games of Aiden O'Connell's career compared to, the volume of work but anyway, they're the same. They're not the same guy, but they're so similar that if it's Gardner or if it's Aiden gets the start to start the season, and they're not producing four games into the year, or the record's not where it wants to be four or five games into the year, I don't think there'll be any hesitation to go to the next guy, because there isn't this massive drop-off. That's a good thing and a bad thing.
Okay.
What you want is a big drop-off between one and two. You want your number one to be so great that you're never really even thinking about moving on to your number two. It's when you have guys that This is the situation that you don't always
want
to be in.
You don't want the revolving door, but there might be a point where it's like you can't help it because you have to go and find a way to win. And who's going to put you in that best position to win?
Yeah, and because the second quarterback in this situation is not going to be far off from the top guy, you're more prone to see, well, maybe this guy, you know, even though their stats are kind of similar, maybe he's going to get this offense a little bit better, yeah. Or maybe we're going to catch some lightning in a bottle here. You know, again, obviously you want to have a Patrick Mahomes or a Joe Burrow or a Justin Herbert and your backup quarterback, just be the backup quarterback. Hey, can our backup quarterback, you know, come in for four games and help us win two games, you know, while we deal with Justin or Patrick's or Joe Burrow's, injury. You don't want to have that second guy be the guy like, man, I wonder if he's really gives us a better chance to win. And that's kind of where the Raiders are right now. It's not the best place to be whatsoever, but it's why they need one of these two quarterbacks to definitively declare themselves the leader, the starter, and move forward, not just for this year, but for next year. Will that happen? I'm dubious that that's going to happen.
Here's Davante Adams from minicamp.
Like what you said, these guys are going out there, and they're not necessarily, you know, Gardner trying to beat out Aiden or Aiden trying to do that. It's more everybody just trying to be the best version of themselves and continue to learn. You know, neither one of those guys have any familiarity with this offense, so just taking advantage of all their reps, learning from the mistakes, because there's going to be, you know, obviously a lot of them. It's the hardest position to play in football, so it's not going to be easy, but they're continuing to push and push each other too, which is the best part about this thing.
Raider Nation Radio here on R&R 920 AM. We'll take calls 702-365-9200. We got to Henderson, Nevada with Raider Mark, the man who first saw Roger and Zapp as his first concert. He's with us now. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Wow, Claire, you remember that. That was at the grad night.
Yes.
My age. That was 88, my friend.
Where are we? What theme park did you guys go to?
Disneyland.
Okay, all right. Oh, I like that.
Awesome. Yeah, Disneyland.
We saw the Pointer Sisters.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. It was great, man. He actually played with his son, too. It was crazy.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. It was fantastic, man. Hey, guys, I just want to quick touch on the quarterback position. They're both going to play because somebody's going to get hurt. I mean, it's just inevitable, right? I mean, these quarterbacks go down.
Yes.
So I think, you know, Aiden and Minshew are going to play this year, just who's going to be the better quarterback overall, and we need both of them. I think the weakest link is the quarterback, maybe the running back, but I don't know, you guys, you can touch base on that. But I just think that, you know, a weak link on the team is the quarterback. I think everything else is falling into place. I'm excited about the season. And, guys, are we going to be at the Rockstar this year or what?
Well, we're working on some different things. That is one of the possibilities, but we for sure will get the word out in due time.
Great, buddy. You know I'll see you guys soon.
All right,
I appreciate
man.
That. You guys
Thank
are
you. Raider Mark, great to hear from you, man. Thank you
know
for
what?
Coming on.
The injury factor is certainly something to
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, but
that's
you,
there.
That okay, I get it. You know, that's unfortunately an unfortunate possibility or part of the game. But you just don't want it to be performance based. You don't want to have to go to number two because the number one guy coming out of training camp and the preseason is not getting the job done. And I do worry about that, you know, in terms of if I'm a Raider fan or if I'm the Raider coaches, I do, you know, I would have concern about that because to me it's a real possibility. You can't have the kind of games that Aiden had against Minnesota. You can't have the kind of games that he had against Kansas City. I know they won the Kansas City game. That was a great day for the Raiders, but you can't count on getting two touchdowns from your defense to save the day like that. And the times where he did have games like that, the Minnesota Vikings, games that they should have won, that he could, if he was just better in, the Raiders would have won those games. You know, I was on with Mike Lombardi's show yesterday, and he brought up a good point. You can't get to 9-10 wins in this league without a really good quarterback, you know, because you're going to have your quarterback has to avoid those types of days and has to have way more good days than those kinds of days. And I don't know that that's out of, you know, Aiden's system. And quite frankly, Gardner Minshew has had clunkers, you know?
Yeah, he's had subpar performances.
That's not why he's a starting quarterback in this league.
Right, and that's why
he can't be consistent.
Right, and that's why the Colts were like, we'll figure something else out behind Richardson. And that, their answer was Joe Flacco,
right,
which lets you know.
Well, they weren't going to give the money.
They weren't going to give the money, but for subpar performances like that Minnesota Vikings game, most quarterbacks don't come back to start.
Right.
You know, especially if you're that young, it looks like you need to sit for a little bit longer to watch how, you know, we need to execute this game plan, because losing 3-0 at home is just not in the plans.
Right. And, you know, I think as much as we all wrote about it, I think Antonio made the right choice because, you know, well, they could have gone to Jimmy Garoppolo. That's what they could have done in that situation. It would have been interesting to see where he was at that point. But I think in their bigger picture of things, again, this is why I think that he's the preferred starter, not to say that he will be the starter, but I think in an ideal world, Aiden O'Connell's the preferred starter because you want to see what you have in him. You want to give him a full season to kind of figure out, you know, if you're the Raiders, where are you at quarterback right now? Do you feel like you have somebody that you can move forward with comfortably on the roster right now? And if you were to think about that right now, Aiden O'Connell probably gives you that better opportunity than Gardner Minshew, who I think we've seen enough of Gardner Minshew to kind of understand what he is and what he isn't.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you got a guy that's, you know, it's still a proverbial unknown because he hasn't yet played a full 16-game, 17-game schedule. What can Aiden O'Connell do with that? We're starting forward now with the Raiders. We'll take a break, and on the other side, we'll get more thoughts from the text line at 702-365-9200 and on the phone, same number, here on Raider Nation Radio.
It's the Morning Tailgate.
All right, thanks for being with us here on this Monday as we wrap it up here on R&R 920 AM. The story that kind of broke towards the end of Friday's show is still one that kind of has been mulling around all weekend, and it was where the state of Kansas, where Governor Laura Kelly signed into law legislation, and it was passed by both the Kansas House and Senate earlier this week to try to bring the Chiefs and Royals from Kansas City into Kansas, from Missouri to Kansas, and then Kansas City to Kansas, not very far. But the law would cover 70% of the cost of both stadiums, requiring the teams to come up with the other 30%. This was a bold move by a legislature that, you know, didn't have a firm commitment from either team necessarily, but they definitely went up and offered something really tantalizing for any pro sports team that wants to get, you know, brand new billion-dollar stadiums. Kansas all of a sudden is like, we'll find the money. We'll make this happen. Just bring it here. How do you think this will start playing out? Because this is definitely a bargaining chip that the state of Missouri didn't count on.
Yeah, and this is the first hurdle. There's others. There's still approval that's going to be needed. In the state, it's got to get signed off on by however Kansas does its governmental business. So this is step one. But certainly, if you're the Chiefs and the Royals. And I know in the Royals' case, they're looking for a brand new stadium, and I think in the Chiefs' case, they were looking to refurbish, their stadium, Arrowhead Stadium. So this is something that can motivate the city of Kansas City and the state of Missouri, and I forget what county they're in,
Jackson County,
to try to get the ball rolling on what it is that the Chiefs and Kansas City Royals need. And if that doesn't work, then if this keeps progressing in the right direction, then maybe it becomes literally where they end up moving. So if you've ever been to a game in Kansas City, the state of Missouri and Kansas, it's literally right there. What is it? 15 minutes? Like I've been, you could drive in and out of Kansas and Kansas City and Missouri, you know, depending on what direction you go, and it's right there. So it's not like they'd be moving a million miles away. It would be kind of like we talked about last week, the Jets and the Giants playing in New Jersey rather than New York City.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what will happen and what will unfold. Like you said, there's a lot of hurdles you gotta forward over. But at the same time, dare to be Kansas. I love the bold move just to see what can be in store, because you don't shy away from an NFL product. If you're a state that needs it, you go get it. Thanks for all the guests. Thanks for all the participation up on the text line. Make sure you text the word tickets to 702-365-9200 so you can qualify for the Summer of Fun giveaway. For Vinny, I'm Clay. Have a great day, everybody. Rich Eisen, he's next.